Today's show is sponsored by Pet Relief. Pet Relief makes all-natural USDA certified organic CBD products for pets using full-spectrum CBD hemp oil that's grown and extracted in Colorado. With a wide variety of products, they have something to assist a range of ailments, such as hip and joint pain, inflammation, situational anxiety, and more. Head to Pet Relief, that's R-E-L-E-A-F.com, and enter the promo code JUNKIE to get 10% off your order. At about 11 o'clock at night on August 17th, 2002, a man I'll refer to as Jim was driving down Ponte Vedra Lakes Boulevard in Jacksonville, Florida. As he was approaching a stoplight, another car pulled up alongside him, and he could tell that the occupant inside was trying to get his attention. Jim assumed the other driver was going to tell him that his back taillight was out, but that's not what the man wanted at all. Instead, the man called out, "Hey, call the police. Somebody shot me and my wife." The man then pulled his car over onto the median, and so Jim pulled his car over to the other side of the street and then ran over. He opened up the man's car door, and the man said, "I've got to get to a hospital." Jim noticed that the man, who was bleeding heavily, was alone inside the car. "Where's your wife?" he asked. "I don't know," the man said. "She's on the beach." Jim asked where on the beach, and the man replied, "I don't know. She's back on the beach somewhere. I got to get to a hospital." Jim flagged down another passing vehicle, this with a couple inside, and asked to use their cell phone so he could call 911. Jacksonville Beach police officers and fire rescue ascended onto the scene. Rescue personnel immediately started tending to the man, who had been shot four times. And meanwhile, the man was trying to direct the officers to where he had last seen his wife. "Somewhere near the beach," he said. Deputy T.W. Sellers noticed a purse lying on the floorboard in the front passenger seat of the man's car. He opened it and dumped its contents out onto the passenger seat. He was hoping to find the ID of the woman they were now looking for. And sure enough, the woman's ID and cell phone were inside. He held up the ID and asked the man if that was his wife, and the man nodded. They were looking for 27-year-old April Barber. Her husband, 32-year-old Justin Barber, was then taken away in an ambulance. After scouring the beach at Guana River State Park, about 10 miles away from where Justin had flagged down the motorist, police officers and rescue personnel found April. She was lying at the foot of the boardwalk, and she was no longer alive. She had been shot once in the left cheek. They were now searching for a killer. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, Episode 76. Justin and April Barber had been married for just over 3 years when the shooting occurred. They had met in their home state of Oklahoma in 1998 through a mutual friend. Justin had just gone through a divorce. They began dating, and just 10 months later, they were married. Both had attended the University of Oklahoma. April had received her bachelor's degree in radiation therapy, and Justin his master's in finance. Shortly after they got married, the couple relocated to Douglas, Georgia for Justin's job. Meanwhile, April worked at a nearby hospital. But not long after that, the couple's marriage became a long-distance one. Justin took an analyst position with a wood product supplier in Jacksonville, Florida, and he lived in a condo there, while April lived and worked in Covington, Georgia. Each weekend, however, April would make the drive to Jacksonville to be with her husband. On that fateful night on August 17, 2002, Justin would tell investigators that after April arrived into town the night before, the two had decided to go out on that Saturday night for a belated 3-year wedding anniversary celebration. While investigators continued searching the beach for clues, the St. John's Sheriff's Department sent some detectives to the hospital where Justin had been taken to see if they could find out more about what happened. After being taken in an ambulance, he had then been airlifted via helicopter to the closest trauma center. When the detectives arrived, Justin was in his hospital bed. Although he was conscious and alert, his 4 gunshot wounds were visible. There was one on his left shoulder, one on his right shoulder, one on his right chest, and another that had gone through the center of his left hand. The officer sat down to speak with him, and after telling him of his wife's passing, he seemed anxious to cooperate in any way he could. He told the officers that he and April had spent the afternoon together, and that later that night, around 8:30, they went out for dinner at a restaurant in Jacksonville Beach called Carrabba's. After dinner, they walked down to the boardwalk by all the bars. They had wanted to go to the Atlantic, but when they got there, they saw that it was no longer there. It was now called something else. So they went to the Ritz instead and played a few games of pool and had a couple drinks there. He said April wanted to go for a drive and a walk on the beach, so they drove south. They stopped at the first beach they came across, which had a parking lot that was locked up. He parked his truck on the side of the road and they walked down the ramp from there. He said they walked along the beach for about 15 minutes, and then April wanted to go back towards the deck. He said they were going there so they could have sex, but while they were walking, a man approached. The following audio is from the hospital room interview. Some parts are a little difficult to understand, so after each clip, I'll reiterate what he says.
He was pointing the gun at us, at me, and he said he wanted cash. And I didn't have my wallet. He said, give me keys. And April said something. I don't know what she said. And he pointed the gun at her. And when he did that, I tried to move in between. He fired the gun. And we started fighting. And I felt like he was hitting me. And I don't know what happened after that.
Justin said the man walked up really fast. He doesn't know where he came from. He pointed a gun at Justin and said he wanted cash. April said something then, he's not sure what, and then the man pointed the gun at her. When he did that, Justin said he tried to go in between them, and that's when the man fired the gun. They started fighting, and he felt the man hitting him, and he doesn't know what happened after that. He said when he came to, he didn't know where the man was or where April was.
I didn't know where he had gone. I didn't know where April had gone. And so I started looking, and I found her in the water. It wasn't deep. She was floating there.
Okay. Do you remember what position she was in or anything like that? I hate to do this to you, but I just need to try to get all the details.
She was face down.
Okay. Was she breathing?
Oh,
could you tell her?
I pulled her out, and I couldn't tell she wasn't responding.
That one happened.
I tried to pick her up, but I couldn't get her over my shoulder. I couldn't get my arm to work, and I couldn't carry her, and so I pulled her. I kept getting dizzy, and I pulled her, and I got her to the deck. And I decided I'd try to flag the car down. And so I ran out to the road, but nobody stopped.
How many cars would you say passed by you?
At least three.
Really? Were they headed south or headed north?
Both.
Really?
Both. But nobody would stop.
Did they see?
I was in the middle of the road. They had to swerve to avoid hitting me.
Okay. Okay. Then what happened?
Got in the truck and drove as fast as I could until I found anybody who would talk to me.
Right.
Who had a phone.
Right.
I asked them to call the police.
He started looking for April and found her floating face down in the shallow water. He pulled her out of the water and he could tell she wasn't responding. He tried to pick her up, but he couldn't get her over his shoulders. He couldn't get his arm to work, and so he pulled her and got her to the boardwalk. He said he could tell that April had been shot. She was limp and her face was bleeding. He decided he was going to flag a car down. He waved at three different cars, all who swerved to avoid hitting him, but none stopped. He said he then got into his truck and drove as fast as he could, looking for someone who could call the police. The detectives asked him to describe the shooter.
He was white, but I think he was dark. He was taller than me, stronger than me. He was heavier than me. I don't know what his face looks like. He had a hat, ball cap. It had something on it, but I don't know what it was. Dark t-shirt,
like normal t-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said the man was white, but with darker skin, taller, stronger, and heavier than him. He was wearing a baseball cap with something on it and a dark t-shirt. He said he doesn't remember seeing the man's pants or shoes, and he didn't get a good look at his face because it all happened so fast. He just remembered the man saying something about cash. He told the detectives that he normally carries cash in his pockets, but that he couldn't be sure if he had any on him at the time. When asked if the man would have any injuries on him from the struggle, Justin said he was only trying to grab at the gun. He wasn't swinging at him, so he didn't get any hits in. He said he didn't remember seeing any other cars in the area. Investigators put out an alert for their suspect and interviewed witnesses who had been in the area that night. One witness told police that they had seen an older Chrysler sedan parked next to Justin's SUV at the beach, but thus far, they were unable to find it. They also searched up and down the beach itself, using helicopters, dogs, and metal detectors. They found three .22-caliber bullet casings, sandy footprints, and drag marks, presumably from where Justin had tried to drag April from the water to the boardwalk. But other than that, they kept coming up empty. There was no trace of the murder weapon or the killer. Justin was released from the hospital the next night. The following week, a funeral for April was held, and her loved ones came out in droves to say their goodbyes. A week went by with no real leads or clues. Detectives asked Justin to go back with them to the beach where it had all happened, to walk them through it again, and he agreed. Justin reenacted what he said he remembered from that night, how the gunman had pointed a gun at them, how he had heard a gunshot ring out before then passing out, how when he came to, he found April floating in the water, and how he struggled to carry her to the boardwalk. The following is from Justin's affidavit, which provides a more detailed description than what he gave in that quick interview with detectives at the hospital. Quote, "We walked for 10 to 15 minutes before turning around to return to the deck. We walked holding hands at the water's edge. April on my right, nearest the water. As we walked north, I felt April tense her hand while holding mine and stop walking. I looked up. I had been watching the waves come in over our feet and saw a man about 10 feet away. He was wearing a dark baseball cap with a light-colored logo on it. He was wearing a baggy t-shirt, dark. He was walking quickly towards us with his arm extended towards me. I thought he had a gun, but it was small. As he approached, he alternately pointed the gun at my face, then my chest, then my face again. The barrel of the gun was small and round like a tube. The man was white. His hand on the gun was pale, but his arm and neck were very tan. He seemed agitated. He was shifting his weight from one foot to the other after he stopped. As he approached, he yelled something at me. I couldn't understand what he was saying because he was yelling and seemed angry. I thought I heard him say cash, but I don't know exactly what he said. I told him my wallet was in the truck. He yelled at me again and jabbed the gun closer to my face. He was right in front of me and the gun was less than a foot from me. I don't know exactly what he said, but I heard him say keys. Before I could get my keys out of my pocket, April spoke. Her voice wasn't angry or confrontational, so I assumed she was speaking to me. I didn't understand what she said. When she spoke, the man pointed the gun at her. I tried to step in between the man and April because I didn't want the gun pointed at her. As I stepped in between the man and April, he fired the gun. It was loud. It shocked me. I don't know if the bullet hit me or if it hit April. I froze for a second and then tried to grab the gun. I had my hands on his hands and tried to hold on, but he was jerking his arms around. I was having trouble keeping my balance, and I lost my grip on the gun. I grabbed the gun again and tried to keep him from pointing it at me. I was dizzy and having difficulty standing up and holding on. I fell to my knees and remember trying to get up. I think I blacked out. I was lying on my side in the sand. The sand was wet and I was wet. I stood up and immediately felt dizzy and nauseated. I couldn't see anyone else. I thought that April had run away. I started yelling for April and looking up and down the beach for her. I ran south down the beach looking for her. I turned around and went back north. Then I saw April in the water. She was face down in the water, not far from the shore. I ran into the water and turned her over. She had a hole in her cheek that didn't seem to be bleeding very badly. I yelled at her, but she didn't respond. I tried to pick her up, and I carried her a short distance before I stumbled in the water. I pulled her onto the sand. I tried to pick her up and put her on my shoulders, but I couldn't lift her high enough. She was so heavy. I picked her up in my arms, but I dropped her. I tried from the other side with my right arm under her head, and I carried her north toward the walkway. I don't know how far I carried her before I fell down again. I couldn't pick her up anymore, so I pulled her by her hands. I couldn't hang on, so I tried to pull her by her forearms. My left hand wouldn't maintain its grip, and I noticed blood on my shirt. I didn't know if the blood was mine or April's. I grabbed April from behind, under her arms, and pulled her backwards as far as I could. I was tired and dizzy, and I was out of breath. I then sat April up and reached under her arms and grabbed the waistband of her pants. I pulled her this way for some distance down the beach. I kept looking for the walkway to the parking lot. When I saw the walkway, I pulled April up the beach. The slope was steep, and I had to stop to rest several times. After I got April to the walkway, I tried to pick her up by the arms and lean her over the rail so that I could put her on my shoulder. I just couldn't get her up high enough, and I dropped her. I was still dizzy, and I know I must have been shot. I left April there and went back to the highway. As soon as I reached the highway, I saw headlights coming from the left, south. I stood at the edge of the road and tried to flag them down. The car didn't slow down that I could tell. Another car came over the hill from the south almost immediately. I stood in the middle of their lane and waved my arm for them to stop. They slowed down and drove by me in the opposite lane. I crossed the highway and looked for my truck. It was to the north. I started towards my truck and saw headlights coming from the north. I stood in the road as the car approached. It slowed and tried to pass in the opposite lane. I moved over to the center lane, but the car didn't stop. I kept going to the truck. I opened the driver's door. I don't remember unlocking the door. And looked in the driver door pocket for my mobile phone. It wasn't there, so I looked in the center console and didn't find it there. I got out of the truck and opened the driver's side rear door looking for April's purse, where she normally keeps it behind the front seat in the floor. I expected to find her mobile phone in her purse. Her purse wasn't there. I got back in the front seat and started driving north. I was afraid that I was dying. I thought that if I passed out, I would die. I don't remember very much about the drive. I tried to drive as fast as I could, and I knew that I would find a policeman in Jack's Beach. I saw a traffic light on red, and several cars stopped at the light. I yelled at one of the drivers to call the police. I tried to tell people where April was, but I couldn't get them to understand me. There were a lot of people yelling at me and getting into the truck. Someone found April's purse and dumped it out on the seat next to me, on the passenger seat. He pulled out the driver's license and asked me if that was April. I told him yes, and he left. I don't remember what happened next. I might have passed out. I remember being in an ambulance and then in a helicopter. Justin told the detectives that he and April weren't having any kind of financial problems at the time of the shooting, and that they hadn't at all throughout their marriage. They both worked full-time jobs, and both brought in a good amount of money each month. He said there was never any infidelity in the marriage either, and that their marriage was happy and normal, even though they were temporarily living apart. He said he and April had recently discussed her finishing her job training the following January and then taking a job in Jacksonville to be closer to him. But as investigators started interviewing April's family and friends, they were surprised to learn that April had been talking to them about her marriage to Justin, and what she had been saying directly contradicted what Justin was telling investigators. By early September, investigators had interviewed April's ex-boyfriend, her father, sister, cousin, aunt, and numerous friends. They found out that there was a strain on April and Justin's relationship almost immediately after their wedding. 1 month into their marriage, April's younger siblings, Julie and Kendon, came to live with them. Their mother had died when April was just in high school, and so she had been looking after them from a young age. But having the siblings there posed problems for April and Justin, and eventually, April made the difficult decision to send them back to live with other family members. It was a sore subject for the couple, and something that Justin allegedly held against April. And that wasn't all. There was alleged infidelity and financial issues, and according to many who knew April, she was ready to leave him. April's ex-boyfriend, Wiley Davis, told police that he had met up with April in early August. He said he asked her how married life was going and that she told him it wasn't quite like how she had planned it. She told him that she thought Justin was cheating on her, and when he asked her why she thought that, she said he had been playing tennis with another woman 2 or 3 times a week, and that he goes out at night and stays out till 3 or 4 in the morning and won't tell her where he is. Wiley said that April was acting strange that night, that he would pay her a compliment and she would say, "You don't know how long it's been since I've heard that." She said she couldn't remember the last time Justin had paid her a compliment. She told him that she and Justin were falling out of love with each other, and that they both knew it, but neither one would admit it. She told him that Justin would never let her get a divorce, that he had been married before, and that he didn't think it was morally right for them to get one. The detectives asked if April had ever talked about her last anniversary with Justin, and he said yes. She had told him, "No flowers, no cards, no dinner, no nothing." She said it was kind of typical. Wiley said he last talked to April a few days before she died. She had told him that she was fed up and that she was ready to get the divorce papers. Then, on that Friday, she left him a voicemail saying she was on her way to Jacksonville and she would call him on Monday. He never heard from her again after that. April's friends also told investigators that April complained to them about her marriage. One friend said that about a week before she died, April told her, quote, "I think I'm going to leave my husband, but I don't know how." She said she suspected that he had been cheating on her, and that when she confronted him about it, he told her she was worrying for nothing and to stop being silly. When she tried to talk to him about how they were both unhappy and how they couldn't live like that anymore, he refused to talk about it and said he's not getting a divorce, that he's not going through that again. April said that whenever she would go to see him in Jacksonville on the weekends, they would never hang out with anyone else. Whenever they got invited to things, Justin would never want to go. April thought it was odd that he constantly went out when she wasn't there, but wouldn't when she was. Another friend, Pamela Davis, said that April was in town in Oklahoma for a wedding 4 months before her death. And during her visit, she asked April how life was going, and April said it was terrible, that her marriage wasn't doing well, and that she suspected Justin of having an affair. Pamela said she asked April if Justin was abusive to her. First, if he was emotionally abusive, and April said yes, he was. Pamela then asked if he was physically abusive, and she said April started crying. She asked April if she was afraid of him, and April said, "Yes, I am." She said there were a few times when he had grabbed a hold of her and threw her against the wall and shoved her. April had wanted to go to counseling, but Justin refused. Pamela said she was worried and asked April to please keep herself safe, that it wasn't a safe situation. She recalled April promising her that she would, and that was the last time she spoke with her. April's best friend, Amber Mitchell, told detectives that she spoke with April on August 2nd as April was making the drive to Jacksonville to see Justin. She said April was crying in that phone call, saying that she was afraid Justin was having an affair and that she didn't want to be in it anymore. She said she was ready to give him an ultimatum about leaving him and that she was ready to confront him. She said their anniversary was that weekend and that she didn't buy him anything, that she had told Justin, "I hope you're not planning to celebrate because I'm not buying you anything." One of April's cousins told detectives that on August 12th, they went antique shopping and that April looked at one of the baby cribs and said that's what she wants if she ever has kids. Her cousin asked her if she and Justin were going to have any, and April said Justin told her he wouldn't have kids with her, that he didn't want to commit to that, and that he was kind of selfish. April's cousin said that she jokingly told April that she needs to leave him, and April responded, "Yeah, I'm gonna." April said that as soon as her training was done at work, in January, she was going to leave him and move back to Oklahoma. She said it was over with her and Justin, and that there was nothing that could keep them together, that she was sick of trying. April's aunt told detectives that April and Justin did have financial problems, and that April talked to her about it a lot. She said April told her that they were essentially broke and that they had a lot of payments they were making. Two house payments where they both lived and two car payments. She said that in May 2002, April told her that Justin was really upset because taxes hadn't been taken out of her paychecks at her job and he had to file an extension. He had told her that they were going to owe a lot of money in taxes. She said April had even picked up a second job to help pay for things. She also told the detectives that Justin had purchased an expensive Audi, and meanwhile, April was afraid that her car was going to break down on her. She said April's car had been broken into and the dash ripped out, but that she didn't have any money to get it fixed. Another one of April's aunts, Patty Parrish, also talked to the detectives about the couple's finances. According to her, April told her that Justin had wanted them to take out $2 million life insurance policies on each other, and April asked her if it was weird that he was pushing for such a large amount. Patty said she told April that it was weird, but that she didn't think they would qualify anyway. April then called her the next day and told her not to say anything to Justin, that he would be furious if he found out she had told her. Investigators looked into whether there was, in fact, an insurance policy. And sure enough, there was $2.3 million in policies, to be exact. And then there was something else that fueled the investigators' suspicions. The medical examiner had concluded that April had been incapacitated after being nearly drowned and then taken to the boardwalk where she was shot. It was a conclusion that didn't match with Justin's story. So now investigators were faced with a multitude of questions. Could Justin have been behind April's murder? And if so, could he really have shot himself to try and cover it up? More on that right after this quick break from today's sponsors. Effective natural skincare products are essential. With Procure, you can feel better about feeling better. Their products are powered by science and enriched with nature, with guilt-free formulas that really work and that you can trust. Their products contain no parabens, alcohol, petrolatum, or fragrance. They just use proven remedies and natural botanicals so you can get all the medicine you need, plus skin-loving ingredients. To heal itchy, irritated skin, try fast-acting hydrocortisone with calendula, enhanced with organic calendula extracts and organic coconut oil to moisturize and reduce inflammation. And check out RosaCare to clear flushed, red, bumpy skin caused by rosacea without irritating skin further. Formulated with hyaluronic acid to moisturize, RosaCare treats redness and evens out skin tone. I love Procure's products. They go on smoothly, with no oily residue and no funky smells. I recently tried the Rosa Care cream to help with some patches of redness I have on my arms, and it has made such a difference. The redness is almost completely gone, and this isn't just a product for women. Men can use it too. Try Procure's Hydrocortisone and Rosa Care today and get a special $3 discount on Amazon using the code 3JUNKIE. Just go to procureheals.com/junkie to be directed to Amazon, where you'll get a special $3 discount with the code 3JUNKIE. That's the number 3 plus junkie, all one word, and make sure you type it in all caps. procureheals.com/junkie, code 3JUNKIE. Getting in shape isn't just about losing weight. It's about feeling better about yourself, whether that means having more energy to keep up with your busy life, fitting into those goal jeans, being more in tune with your body's needs, or practicing better self-care. Noom is a habit-changing solution that helps users develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. With Noom, no food is good, bad, or off-limits. Instead, Noom teaches moderation by helping you track meal habits, visualize portion sizes, and see calorie density at a glance. It can even be used in conjunction with many pre-existing popular diets. To help me with the baby weight I gained since having my daughter, I've started using Noom in conjunction with my diet and exercise plan. It is literally the best way to keep me accountable on my quest to get healthy and back into shape again. And I know I mentioned this in my last episode, but my favorite part is the fact that I can text my Noom coach at any time and ask for eating and exercise tips. How cool is that? You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/junkie. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/junkie to start your trial today. That's Noom.com/junkie. The last weight loss program you'll need. Even while investigators were grappling with the possibility that Justin just may be the shooter, April's family made their feelings clear. In February 2003, just 6 months after her death, April's aunt, younger brother, and sister filed a civil lawsuit against Justin in an attempt to keep him from cashing in on her life insurance policy, on the basis that he was a suspect in April's death. Justin responded to their accusations in a motion of his own, saying, "I had no involvement or complicity in the death of my wife. Rather, the same person who killed my wife shot me 4 times in various parts of my body." In a deposition for the civil suit, Justin said that he had stopped paying the premiums on April's life insurance policy and that he had no idea that it was still active at the time of her death. He said April had even paid the last premium on it, not him. Justin also admitted that there was infidelity in the marriage. He said he had joined an online dating site and admitted that he had affairs with 5 different women, but he said April never knew about them and that they had a good relationship anyway. 2 years went by with no arrests in the case, until finally, a grand jury was convened, and quite surprisingly, Justin testified before them in an attempt to clear his name before any charges were brought. He sat and answered their questions for nearly 3 hours, and in his testimony, he maintained that he did not kill April and shoot himself. Quote, "I did not murder April, I did not kill her, and I didn't plan to." But nonetheless, the grand jury handed down an indictment, and Justin was arrested and charged with first-degree murder, right outside the grand jury room. If convicted, he would be facing the death penalty. Before his trial was set to begin, the judge ruled that certain statements made by April's friends to investigators would not be admissible at trial, including how she had told one friend that she was going to leave Justin and move to Oklahoma, and how another friend told investigators that April said she had confronted him and that he knew she was going to divorce him. But even without those statements, prosecutors felt they had a strong case. Justin's trial started in June of 2006. The Court TV channel decided to air it live on TV, and so each day the reporters would set up camp outside the courthouse to discuss the day's testimony. In their opening statement, prosecutors told the jury that Justin had been cheating on April and had accrued a large amount of debt. They said he killed April so he could get out of his marriage and collect her life insurance money. The defendant had no less than four affairs during his marriage, Assistant State's Attorney Chris France told the jurors. He said the evidence shows that he was living the life of a single man. He said that Justin planned the murder and that he shot April on that beach. He called the assailant a phantom, one that was never there, and said that the evidence from the scene, as well as Justin's behavior before and afterwards, will prove that he was the killer. He alleged that Justin held April underwater until she was unconscious and then dragged her body up to the boardwalk, where he then shot and killed her. As for Justin's injuries, he said they were so minor that the hospital sent him home after applying some antibiotic cream. Justin's attorney, Robert Willis, told the jury in his opening statements that not only were Justin's affairs with other women meaningless, but that he wasn't broke at all, that he had a great job at a large company, and that his financial future was the last thing he was concerned about. Quote, he was a young man, pretty clearly full of himself, working for a Fortune 500 company, traveling internationally, and not totally unattractive. He's not proud of it, but there's nothing he can do about it now. He said the crime happened just as Justin said it did, that he and April went to the beach to have sex and were attacked by a man who demanded money from them before opening fire. He noted that Justin was cooperative with investigators, that he gave multiple interviews and even did a reenactment with them. He said he will call witnesses to the stand who will testify about seeing that other car parked near Justin's car at the time of the shooting, that the car was gone by the time police got to the scene, and that investigators were unable to ever locate it. He said that tip almost went ignored because within hours, investigators had already decided that Justin was guilty. The first witnesses called to the stand were the initial responding officers. Lieutenant Benjamin Tanner with the St. John's Sheriff's Office said he found April's body on the boardwalk leading to the beach. He said she was unresponsive and he noticed white foam with red fluid around it on her face. Photos of her body were then shown to the jury. April, wearing jeans and a red shirt, was lying on her back with her legs folded beneath her. The lead detective in the case, Detective Howard Cole, told the court that he first became suspicious of Justin while he was interviewing him at the hospital. He said Justin's description of the attacker was vague, saying that it was too dark to really see the man's face. And then a few days later, Justin volunteered a bit of information that he hadn't before. He told them he may have grabbed the man's gun during the struggle. In later interviews, he said Justin lied about cheating on April. Detective Cole had directly asked him about a woman named Shannon Kennedy, and Justin replied that they were just friends. But he admitted that they had been sleeping together after Detective Cole told him that they were questioning Shannon in another room. Then, after the interview, Justin told him to ask Shannon if she would give him a ride home. Shannon said no. He said Justin also made some other statements that were odd. For example, when he was asked why he had driven so far to get help, nearly 10 miles, instead of stopping at one of the many houses he passed along the way, Justin remarked that he didn't want to get some old man out of bed. And although Justin said that he and April had over $50,000 in credit card debt, he denied that he had any financial issues. But regardless of his suspicions, Detective Cole said they still tried to verify and follow up on any leads that Justin gave them. They searched for the murder weapon, which was a .22 caliber gun, but the dense vegetation at the beach made that difficult, and so it was never recovered. When asked if he knew of any other robberies that occurred in that same area, he said no. The defense requested that the reenactment Justin did with investigators be played for the jury, and so it was. In the reenactment video, Justin can be seen crying and wiping away tears as he recounted how he came across April's body, floating face down in the water. He also cried when recounting how he tried but he was unable to carry her to their car, and so he had to leave her on the beach while he went to get help. On cross-examination, Justin's attorney, Robert Willis, asked Detective Cole about witnesses who saw Justin and April together that night. Detective Cole told the jury that a mother and her son were driving on the highway at about 10:30 near the area of Guana Park and saw Justin and April walking hand in hand down the side of the road. Willis then accused Detective Cole of quickly jumping to conclusions and assuming the worst about Justin's actions that night. He brought up how Detective Cole was suspicious of how Justin drove that 10 miles to get help and didn't bother stopping at any of the houses or businesses he passed along the way. But Detective Cole acknowledged that the houses Justin passed were mostly gated and that the businesses he passed were mostly closed at that time of night. But even so, Detective Cole said he doesn't think anyone could accept that Justin left his wife on the beach and drove that far to get help. It's inconceivable, he said. Willis then asked him how that makes any sense with the prosecution's theory that Justin had pre-planned April's murder for at least 6 months. Detective Cole responded that something went terribly wrong, and although he had a plan, he must have gone off script and was panicking. Shannon Kennedy, the woman with whom Justin was having an affair, took the stand and testified that she and Justin met in the summer of 2002, just weeks before April's death. She said they dated for about 3 weeks and that she initially didn't know he was married. When he told her, he said there were serious problems in his marriage. He said that he loved April, but that he just couldn't live with her. In mid-August, shortly before the murder, she said she was over at Justin's condo and saw him hanging up photos of April. He told her that it was only temporary, that family members were coming into town, and so he needed to put the pictures up to make it look like they were happy. She said Justin invited her to go on 2 separate trips with him during this time, to California and to Georgia, but that she turned him down. After April died, she only saw Justin 2 more times. One of those times, he came to visit her at her job after he got out of the hospital. She was asked what he looked like when he came, and she said not good, that he was crying and looked like a wreck. He told her that he had tried to save April, but couldn't. Then a couple months later, he came by again, this time with a gift for her, maple syrup. But Shannon also told the jury that she and Justin weren't serious. She said neither one of them wanted anything long-term, and that there was never any talk about being in love or anything like that. The state then presented testimony about the barber's finances. A forensic accountant took the stand and told the jury that Justin had lost $36,000 to the stock market and that he had over $50,000 in credit card debt. A life insurance agent then told them that 11 months prior to the murder, Justin came into his office to purchase life insurance policies for himself and for April. Both policies were for $2 million each. After he read about April's death in the newspaper, the agent said he then called Justin and offered his condolences. He offered to help him collect the $2 million in insurance money, and 3 weeks after the murder, Justin came back into his office to fill out the paperwork. But even so, as of the trial, Justin still hadn't received the money due to the civil suit filed by April's family, including April's aunt, Patty Parrish. Patty also testified at his trial. She said she spoke to Justin the day after the murder. He told her that he had been shot 5 times and that he didn't know if April had been shot. She said she asked him if he had tried performing CPR on her, and he said no. The prosecution also had some computer evidence to present to the jury, evidence of Google searches that had been conducted on Justin's computer. Nowadays, this is a pretty standard part of an investigation that can be used against defendants at trials, something that most of us are pretty familiar with. But back in 2006, when this trial took place, it wasn't that common. And prosecutors were hoping that what the computer searches in this case would show just might surprise the jury. Christopher Hendry, a forensic computer analyst with the State Crime Laboratory, testified that he found 2 Google searches of interest that were conducted on Justin's laptop that he used for work, both within months of April's murder. On April 14th, 2002, Justin entered the following search terms into Google. Quote, trauma cases gunshot right chest. Then, a few days later, on February 20th, he searched, quote, medical trauma gunshot chest. Hendry testified that there was also a search on July 19th, 2002, for Florida divorce. This search was partially deleted. Then, on August 17th, 2002, just hours before April was murdered, and shortly before they went out to dinner, Justin downloaded some songs to his home computer. One of the songs was Used to Love Her by Guns N' Roses, which was actually in the deleted files in his hard drive. The song's lyrics were displayed on a large poster board for the jury, lyrics that included the phrase, I used to love her, but I had to kill her. On cross-examination, Hendry told the jury that there were 2,200 total Google searches on Justin's computer, but that the ones he testified about were the only ones that were considered to be relevant to the case. He agreed that he couldn't tell what was being looked at on the computer either before or after the searches. As for the downloaded songs, Hendry acknowledged that he couldn't tell if Justin had actually listened to the song. He could only say that it had been downloaded. He also told the jury that the song was just one of 1,700 songs on Justin's hard drive, and that 16 of those had been downloaded on the day of the murder, including November Rain, another Guns N' Roses song. Other songs included ones by the Rascal Flatts and the Pointer Sisters. On redirect, however, he said Used to Love Her was the only song that he could definitively say had been deleted after the murder. The deposition that Justin gave for his civil case against April's family was played in court, where Justin said he doesn't recall making any of those computer searches. He also talked about his marriage to April and said they didn't have children because they weren't ready. When asked if he ever told anyone that he refused to have children with her, he said he didn't recall. He said they had a normal marriage with normal ups and downs. When asked for an example of an up, he said, "We were in love." When the attorney asked what other ups they had, Justin said, I don't recall specifically. Regarding the day of April's death, he said he vaguely remembers it, but that he does remember that they had sex during the day, which was not something they usually did. Other than that, he said he couldn't recall what they talked about or did, but he was adamant that April did not end things with him, that she never told him she wanted out of the marriage. He insisted that they had a nice evening when she drove up on Friday and that they were preparing to go out on Saturday night in celebration of their anniversary. Then the state focused on blood evidence. DNA expert Dale Gilmore testified that there were 46 blood stains found on April's pants and that 36 of them were female blood. The remaining 10, he said, could have been male, although they weren't good enough quality for DNA extraction and typing. On cross-examination, Willis told Gilmore that April's pants had been left on her body while it was stored at the morgue for days before being autopsied. He asked for Gilmore's reaction to that sort of handling of the evidence, and Gilmore agreed. That's a very poor way to handle your evidence, he said. Paramedic Susan Brown responded to Justin's SUV the night of the shooting and testified that he had minimal bleeding. He was then airlifted to a local trauma center where he was treated by Dr. Tapas. Dr. Tapas testified that Justin was conscious, alert, and able to answer all of their questions. He noted that Justin's most significant injury was that to his chest, below his right nipple. There was also a second wound that was of concern, and that was near his neck. Then there was a wound on his left shoulder, and two on either side of the palm of his left hand. But the wounds themselves were minor, he said. They just had to be kept clean so they could heal. On cross-examination, he said the wounds could have caused Justin a significant amount of pain that could have led to a loss of consciousness. Robert Willis then brought up the fact that Justin had been interviewed by a psychologist while at the hospital and that the psychologist had described him as distraught about his wife's death and said he was experiencing guilt about his decision to leave her and go for help. But the state's star witnesses were in the form of forensic experts, a medical examiner, and a specialist in crime scene reconstruction. The pathologist who performed April's autopsy, Dr. Terrence Steiner, testified that on the night she was killed, April had been wearing a sleeveless pink shirt, pants, underwear, and was barefoot. He testified that April had white foam right near her mouth, which he said indicated that she first suffered a near-drowning episode. He said April was then dragged to the boardwalk and shot in the cheek, where she died within minutes. He told the jury that she was not moved after that, that in a photo of April's face that was shown to the jury, you can see liquid and dried blood coming from both nostrils down onto the left side of her face. That bolstered the prosecution's theory that she had been shot at the boardwalk where she lay. April also had abrasions or cuts on her left arm. He said those occurred while she was alive because there was blood oozing out of them. He said she likely got the cuts from rubbing up against shells that had lined the beach where she was killed, as a result from being held down and struggling. He said when April was shot, the bullet had gone into her left cheekbone, through both sinuses, and then embedded itself on the first cervical vertebrae. On cross-examination, Robert Willis pushed back. He brought out an enlarged version of the photograph with blood on one side of April's face. He asked if Dr. Steiner knew when that photo had been taken, and he said no. Willis told him that it was actually taken about 3 hours after the shooting. Willis then pointed out additional abrasions on April's body and asked if April had been pulled under her arms and dragged across the beach, as the prosecution alleged. Would he agree that that would not account for the injuries found on her? And Dr. Steiner said he agreed. Willis also questioned Dr. Steiner on blood that was found on the center, back, and bottom of Justin's shirt, blood that was determined to have been April's. Willis asked if that blood was proof that Justin was telling the truth about trying to pull April up over his shoulder to carry her, and Dr. Steiner said he could not say for sure how that got there. Willis pointed out that there was also Justin's blood found underneath April's armpits that suggested he really did try to drag her up the beach. And perhaps in what might be considered a big point for the defense, although Dr. Steiner testified that April had suffered a near-drowning episode, he also said that the foam on April's cheek could be consistent with April having died in the salt water. Jerry Findlay, a crime scene reconstruction specialist, testified that in Justin's statements to police, he describes trying to drag April up the beach in a number of ways— by grabbing her arms, by trying to put her over his shoulder, and by dragging her by the pants, to name a few. But he agreed that the blood on April's face, the one depicted in that photo that was shown to the jury, didn't jive with that. He said the blood flow was consistent with her head going back, hitting the sand, and then staying in that same position. Quote, "If the body had been moved that many times, the head would change positions, at which time the blood flow would have changed positions. When she fell and the blood started, it was right there. She didn't move." And that wasn't the only inconsistency that Findlay found with Justin's statement and the evidence. He said Justin was shot in the hand, yet his blood was not found on the waistband of April's pants, meaning he couldn't have grabbed them to drag her up the beach, as he described. But on cross-examination, when Robert Willis pointed out that April's blood was found on the bottom of Justin's shirt and on his pants, which would then be consistent with Justin's statement and not the prosecution's, Findlay said he couldn't explain that. He also acknowledged that no blood was found on the boardwalk. According to the reporters covering the trial, they were a little surprised when, after the day's testimony, the state then rested their case. The defense started their case by calling one of the paramedics who first responded to the scene to the stand. Brian Erb testified that he didn't see any blood on April's face as he was checking her vitals. Robert Willis held up the same photo of April's face that prosecutors had shown to the jury earlier and asked if he saw any blood like that, and Erb said no. Jason Pryor, a tourist from Tennessee, testified that he and his wife were driving on the highway that night when they passed Justin's SUV and saw an old Chrysler sedan parked next to it. A little bit later, the SUV passed them on the road. It was going at a high rate of speed and the hazard lights were on. It came to a stop at the median, and that's when they were flagged down by a man who told them, "This guy has been shot." Jason said his wife called 911 and that Justin was going in and out of consciousness. After help arrived, Jason and his wife drove back to where they had initially seen the SUV. The other car was gone by that time, he said. He testified that he was an off-duty first responder, and so he, too, checked April's vital signs when he came across her. He said he didn't see any blood on her face, either. Jason's wife also took the stand, and she described how Justin was acting when they first came across him. She said he was hyperventilating, was nervous and scared, and that he kept rocking back and forth. The defense then called their own experts to the stand to counter the state's experts, including their own financial analyst, their own medical examiner, and their own crime scene reconstructionist. Their financial analyst testified that according to the life insurance records, April had filled out all of the paperwork associated with her policy and that she even met with a representative from the insurance company at her home. He said that April owned the policy and had full control over it. Dr. William Sterner testified that he used to be the state medical examiner in Arkansas and Rhode Island. He told the jury that in his opinion, Justin's wounds were from a single bullet that went through his palm and into his chest as Justin struggled with the shooter. He also countered the state's expert who said that Justin's injuries were superficial. He said that Justin was lucky to have survived, that the wound to his left shoulder had fractured a bone, and the wound to the other shoulder narrowly missed a large artery. He said Justin could have died if that artery was hit. In his 40 years of doing this, he said he had never seen anyone shoot themselves four times, like how the state was alleging. As for the blood on April's face, the blood prosecutor said was only on one side of her face. Dr. Sterner said that it was a re-bleed or a secondary bleed. He also said he didn't think it was likely that April experienced a near-drowning episode. There was no water in her stomach, and her lungs didn't weigh as much as he would expect them to. But on cross-examination, Assistant State's Attorney Chris France grilled Dr. Sterner about whether Justin's injuries could have been self-inflicted. And Dr. Sterner said yes, they could. Alexander Jason was the defense's crime scene analyst, who was a private consultant from California. He testified that the bullet holes in Justin's shirt didn't line up with the wounds on his body, and he said that was consistent with his shirt being tugged on during a struggle. He also said there was gunshot residue on Justin's palm and on his shoulder and arm, but not on the chest wound. That meant that Justin's hand was a barrier between the gun and his chest, he said. In his closing argument, Assistant State's Attorney Matt Foxman told the jury that the evidence they presented proves that Justin took a .22 caliber pistol, pointed it right at his wife's face, and pulled the trigger. He said in order for the jury to find Justin guilty of first-degree murder in the state of Florida, they must find that 1, April Barber is dead, 2, that the death was caused by a criminal act of Justin Barber, and 3, there was a premeditated killing. He told them to look at the blood flow and said that blood flow follows gravity. He said Justin claims that he picks her up out of the water, manages to go just a very short distance, then attempts to carry her in a multitude of ways. But it's a limp body, he said, and imagine the ways that her head would be moving and bleeding from that gunshot. He told the jury to look at that photo of April's face and said, "She was shot where she was found, at the boardwalk, not the waterline." Foxman then focused on the blood transfer and how some of Justin's blood was on April and some of April's blood was on him. "All that proves is that he was present when she died," he said, pointing out that any transfer of blood from April to Justin could have been from those cuts on her arm while he carried her from the water to the boardwalk before shooting her. Justin's blood was found on April's right wrist and upper left arm, but Foxman said that perhaps that was from him checking her pulse and trying to pick her up to get her into the car. If Justin had dragged April by the waistband, with his thumbs tucked in, as he said in his deposition. His hand that was shot would have bled. There would be blood in her waistband, but there wasn't. Justin also claimed in the deposition that he looked in the back seat of his SUV for April's purse, with her cell phone inside. But Foxman said there was no blood in the back seat, yet there was blood in the driver's seat, where Justin sat as he drove. Foxman also said there was no physical evidence of a third person with Justin and April that night at the beach. "I mean, think about that," he said. "The defendant's engaged in this struggle for his life, yet no hair, skin, or DNA is found of a third party." He said Justin drove so far to find help because he wanted to put time and distance between himself and the crime scene. He wanted to let the tide come up and erase some evidence. He said he also had to drive away so he could get rid of the gun. He said that even though Shannon had testified that their relationship was casual, it wasn't casual to Justin. He pointed to the fact that Justin had invited her on two trips before April died, and that one of the first things he did after getting out of the hospital was to go see her at her work. He said he insisted on seeing her, and that when he found out that she was at the police station talking to detectives, he even asked if she would give him a ride home. He also pointed out that Justin needed the insurance money, that he was in debt. He told the jury that Justin saying in his deposition that he thought the insurance policy had lapsed doesn't make sense because they had only purchased it 11 months prior. He said April had paid the last premium on it, but that Justin had likely planned it that way so it wouldn't look suspicious, and so he could claim that he thought it had lapsed. The old adage is true, even if it's corny. The defendant has 2 million reasons to commit this crime, he said. He also referenced the computer searches found on Justin's computer. Now I ask you, rhetorically, what are the odds of somebody researching gunshot wound to the right chest, getting a gunshot wound to the right chest 6 months later? Those odds just don't exist, he said. He also pointed out that Justin deleted the search one day before he gave his computer to investigators. He asked the jury to find Justin guilty. In his closing arguments, Justin's attorney, Robert Willis, said the state's case was a purely circumstantial evidence case. He said there was no gun recovered, and that there was no evidence that Justin had ever possessed the type of gun that was used in the murder. He said there were no witnesses that pointed to Justin as the killer, no evidence that he fired a gun that evening at all, and no evidence to support the state's theory that he shot himself 4 times. He said the state is saying that Justin planned the murder back in February of that year, and that they're putting forward 2 possible motives, one, adultery, and the other, money. He put up on the screen an analysis that was done on the barber's income from when they were approved for the insurance policy. It shows April's income as $73,000 a year and Justin's as $105,000 a year. He said, quote, "Mr. Barber had an MBA from Oklahoma University. Mr. Barber is 30 years of age, and Mr. Barber is making $105,000 a year. With all of his future ahead of him with a Fortune 500 company, $2 million is not the motive for Justin Barber, certainly not the motive to kill your own wife." He said Justin's account that he only heard one shot has remained consistent, and that if he had planned out his story ahead of time, why would he only say he heard one shot when he was shot 4 times? He said the reason is because when people are under stress like that, their senses are not acute. He said another fact is that April was wet when she was found on the boardwalk and that there were drag marks found on the beach. He said the abrasions on April's body were tiny and that there was nothing to suggest that she had been in any kind of struggle for her life. He said all the facts fit in with what Justin says happened. He questioned why, if as the state said, Justin held April underwater, why he would not simply continue drowning her if murdering her was his intent. He said all he would have to do is drown her and push her out into the water. Why would you get involved in drowning, period? Why would you get in the water at all? If murder was in his heart, why wouldn't he just shoot her? He asked. He said it doesn't make any sense. He also asked why Justin would then bring her out of the water and drag her all the way across the beach to the point that's closest to the highway, where anybody who's coming to the beach would see him, and then shoot her. Now that doesn't make any sense at all, he said, especially since the government is trying to tell you that he had been planning this since at least February 2002. He suggested that it was a robbery gone bad, that if Justin had planned it to make it look like a robbery, he would have taken something from April. He would have at least removed the ring from her finger. He then slammed the way the evidence in the case was handled. He said there was likely more blood from Justin on April's shirt, but that evidence was destroyed while her body was lying at the morgue for days. They can't tell you it's not there, he said. And as for the prosecutor saying that the blood on April's clothing doesn't match Justin's statement about how he tried carrying her several different ways, he said it's possible that Justin simply made a mistake. Quote, is it just possible that a guy who's been shot four times, been drinking, and his wife has been murdered in front of him, is it possible that he's not very precise as to exactly how he carried her coming up that beach? He also said that Justin's wounds were not bleeding very much, as the prosecution had suggested. He acknowledged that the searches on Justin's computer do look odd, but he said the evidence is not conclusive that Justin even made those searches himself. But assuming he did, he said the experts couldn't tell what had been looked at before or after the searches. He speculated that maybe Justin saw something on CSI the night before or read something in an article that triggered his mind to go there. He also pointed out that there were no searches for shooting yourself in the hand or anywhere else other than the chest. He asked why he wouldn't research the rest of it if that's what he was planning on doing. We don't have context, he said. As for the songs, he suggested April may have been the one who downloaded them, that there were songs downloaded at that same time, 16 in all, that didn't have anything to do with anything. As for why that song was deleted, he said it wouldn't shock him if Justin found it on his computer and thought, this isn't something I want to be here, before he turned the computer over to the police. If it was the premeditated crime the government suggests, he asked, would he have downloaded a song like that with those kinds of lyrics the afternoon before? Would he give the police his computer without requiring a search warrant? He said he can't be sure that the driver of the car the Pryors saw carried the murderer, but that no one else can be sure either, because nobody pursued it. He said a Be on the Lookout, or BOLO, wasn't even issued for that car until 2 days later. He then closed out by asking a number of questions. Why would he drive 10 miles? Why shoot himself in areas where he could die? Why drag her up the boardwalk to be closer to where she could be discovered? Why not steal something, throw her ring in the ocean and say, they took my wife's diamond ring? Why not bring his own phone and call the police? That man is not guilty of this crime, he said. The jury, which consisted of 6 men and 6 women, deliberated for about 40 hours before reaching their verdict.
In the Circuit Court, 7th Judicial Circuit, in and for St. Johns County, Florida, State of Florida versus Justin Murtis Barber, case number 04-1748-CF, verdict. We, the jury, find defendant Justice Murtis Barber as follows. Guilty of first-degree premeditated murder as charged in the indictment.
Guilty of first-degree murder. During the sentencing phase, Justin's attorney rather surprisingly didn't introduce any witnesses to plead on Justin's behalf. Instead, Robert Willis told the jury that they had convicted an innocent man as he explained why no witnesses were called. Quote, he will not put his family through that. He will not do that in an effort to seek mercy for a crime he did not commit. He then said, I don't know how you got where you are. Apparently, you have found every sinister inference there is. The jury then returned a recommendation for the death penalty by an 8-4 vote, but it would ultimately be up to the judge to decide whether to take that recommendation. After Justin's conviction and before he was sentenced, his attorneys filed a motion requesting to interview the jurors. They were concerned that they may have been affected by the former prosecutor in the case appearing multiple times on court TV during the trial. They stated that she had made statements about the case on June 14th, June 20th, and June 21st. The jurors were not sequestered until the afternoon of the 21st, and they had their cell phones on them and could contact people outside. While they didn't have any specific information as to what the jurors may have heard, they stated that due to the massive publicity, they were suspicious that it happened. Not only was the trial aired on court TV, but it was also on the front page of the local newspaper each day, as well as on the local news stations. Their motion, however, was denied. In the state's sentencing memorandum, the state wrote that Justin had held April underwater until she became unconscious before shooting her. They argued that this was an aggravating factor, deserving of the death penalty. But at Justin's sentencing hearing on September 16, 2006, Judge Hedstrom disagreed. In fact, he said that the state's evidence was actually consistent with the defense's theory of the case, that April had been shot by the water's edge and not on the boardwalk. Quote, "While the medical examiner favors the shot where she lay theory, his testimony acknowledges the white foam findings are consistent with the victim being shot at the water's edge first, then falling into the water, then being dragged to the boardwalk and left. Also, there is no evidence that the abrasions were caused by a near-drowning episode, only speculation." He concluded that the state didn't prove the aggravating factors beyond a reasonable doubt. He then rejected the jury's recommendation for the death penalty and sentenced Justin to life in prison without parole. In May 2012, Justin requested a new trial on the basis of ineffective counsel, that he wasn't properly represented. He accused his attorney, Robert Willis, of the following. He said Willis didn't use photographic evidence of the crime scene that would have helped his case. He said Willis insisted on taking the case to trial, even though Justin would have taken a plea deal. He said Willis failed to investigate the alibi of a convicted rapist from the area and failed to present him as an alternate suspect. He said Willis failed to poll the jury about the effect the publicity had on them before and during the trial. He said Willis failed to challenge testimony from the lead detective when the detective testified that there had been no similar attacks on that beach. And he said Willis didn't object to the fact that the jurors had access to their mobile phones instead of being fully sequestered. But Justin's request was denied, and to this day, he remains behind bars. And that's all for today's episode. I'd love to know what you think about this case. Do you think Justin murdered April? Or do you think that it was a robbery gone wrong? Let me know by sending me an email at podcast@courtjunkie.com, by messaging me on Instagram @courtjunkie, or by tweeting me @courtjunkiepod. As always, if you want to hear these episodes early and ad-free, please consider going to courtjunkie.com/support, which will redirect you to my Patreon page, where you can donate as little as $1 a month and get access to early ad-free episodes. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.